Welcome back, everybody, to Arts About.
Morning, Sally. A show about art, mostly about art, mostly a work of art in itself.
Mostly. That sounds a little bit qualitative. Qualitative
well,
this morning, John.
You frowned when I said allegedly.
Yes. No, we do try to stick to track. Now, we are brought to you each week by the generosity of the McClelland Gallery and Sculpture Park, and we are facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio in which we sit. Good morning, John Baird. How are you this morning?
Very good.
That's good. What have you got for us this week?
Oh, I'm going to talk about crocheted coral reefs.
Ah, the Wertheim twins.
Yes, the Wertheim twins, who apparently you know.
I do know the Wertheim twins, yeah.
But this is very interesting to me, all of this stuff that they're up to. And I want to mention also a little bit of charming art forgery.
Oh, we like a little
or
charming art forgery.
Not.
Yeah, okay. Mm. Oh, okay, we're not going to find out what it is now, of course. We will wait for
forgery or not, I mean, you know, that's the conversation.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. Yeah. Well, we look forward to that later on in the program. On the program this week, we've got two new local ventures to be talking about. There's a music school in Rosebud and a new gallery in Merricks. The music school is a new venture cooked up by musician, singer-songwriter Cheryl Beattie and has opened already on the corner of Bonio Road and Point Nepean Road in Rosebud. The Plaza Corner, for many of us that would probably know the Plaza down there. And the new gallery is the brainchild of Penny Gebhardt, and she's an ex-Australian gallery curator, and she and Kiara Finnegan have just opened a new intimate exhibition space at Silverleaf Yoga School in Merricks, showcasing the work of contemporary artists. So they're all coming into the studio this morning. It's a very bustling morning, in and out that door. Cliff's going to add his dulcet tones too to the mix and hopefully slam a door or two as he comes in and comes out.
I don't think anyone would be surprised if they could hear Cliff coming through that door.
No. So while we get our first guests in the chair, here's a taste of some 80s native sounds with a Murrumpi band and a song called Mulga and Spinifex. Now, we may have missed the opening last night, but we still have a chance to see the work of the first two showcased artists at the new gallery space, Silverleaf Art Box in Merricks. But before we hear about those artists, I've got Penny Gebhardt and Kiara Finnegan in the studio with us this morning, and they're the founders of this new art space, and they're going to tell us a little bit about themselves and a little bit about the gallery, come yoga studio. Welcome, Penny and Kiara. Thanks for coming into the studio with us today.
Thanks for having us.
And I have to announce, actually, this is an Arts About first. We have a baby in the studio.
Yeah.
Is it Kiara's baby?
Yes.
And her name is?
Eleanor.
Eleanor. Yeah. Well, it's very exciting. We might
quite
have
a nice looking baby, I have to say, and got the eyes on high beam there.
She certainly has, and the lips wrapped around Mum's purse by the look of things. Fantastic. Okay, so tell us, what's the new art studio and why have we got it? Penny?
Our new art space is called Silverleaf Art Box, and it's an adjunct to the existing yoga school, Silverleaf Yoga School. Kiara, you might like to talk about how it initially came into being.
So my partner Robin and I started the Silverleaf Yoga School 3 years ago.
Which is an Iyengar yoga studio,
I understand.
Right. Yep.
We also have anti-gravity aerial yoga there too.
Which sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah, it is. And we designed the building ourselves and had it built. And as part of the building, we have a student room. So there's the yoga studio, then a breezeway, and then a student room, which is about 9 by 9 metres. And so we'd always wanted to have an art aspect to our school. So the art boxes were a good idea to be discreet enough not to take over the space. So what we decided in the end was to make two art boxes. So we had a carpenter make those, and they're in the breezeway. And then on opening night, we are using the student room as well to display a lot more of the artist's work. And then after opening night, their work will contract into those two art boxes which are in the breezeway.
So you've got a gallery expanding and contracting like the universe.
Yes, well, I like that metaphor.
So presumably then that means that the art pieces are going to be reasonably small.
The pieces that will be in the boxes the boxes are quite small.
They're about 900 millimetres wide, about 50 metres. 50 millimetres high.
And they're timber boxes that are attached to the wall, and they're internally lit with LED lights. And, so the work in there will be quite small. There is that constraint. But for the launch, that's the time when the art comes out of the boxes. There's the opportunity to have larger works. And the Silverleaf Yoga School is situated in this beautiful, beautiful grounds. There's a big sloping lawn and gorgeous
trees. Where
is
it exactly? What's its address?
It's 3361 Frankston Flinders Road. It's just down the road from Merrick's General Store.
Ah, well, a lot of people will know that where that is on their radar, so that's good.
Yeah.
So we've just had the first opening. Who are the two artists that you're featuring as the inaugural artists?
Well, the first artist is Ingrid Brooker, and she's a multimedia artist from Melbourne, and we're very excited about her work. She's made a series of sculptures that are all based around the motif of the bird.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some photographs of them. They're very beautiful.
Yeah, they're lovely. And she has a great affinity with birds. They're something that she's always connected with, and she uses them when she's finding it hard to focus on her work. She often will just look out the window at a bird, and it will really concentrate her focus on, mm-hmm. on what she's doing. Ingrid is first and foremost an animator, and these
oh,
works...
Oh, is she?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and these works are kind of... When you know that about her, you can sort of see how these sculptures tie into her animation work. So she's made these beautiful birds, and her observational abilities are really strong, and it's interesting how she's captured these different characters in the birds, and, yeah, they're great.
And who's the other artist?
So the other artist is Vicky Randall, and she's a local potter from St Andrews Beach. I met her a few years back at the Summers Art Fair,
mm-hmm.
and I loved her work, and I've been toying with the idea with her of having this art box for a few years now, and it was only now that we finally got it up and running, and she is our first artist and sort of helped me bring the idea to fruition. She's been potting for many years, and she's recently completed her a course at Frankston TAFE.
Yeah.
She's also been exhibiting at a few other galleries around. She's
Antipodes amongst them.
Antipodes and...
Yeah, recently she was at the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery at the Storm in a teacup.
I saw those, and I like her pots. I own a couple, actually, and I'd like the remark that's made in your... information here that they're nicely weighted in the hand, and I think that's absolutely true of her stuff. Always feels good.
It does.
Yeah, very tactile.
We were having a play with them this morning, and she's kept this palette really simple. She's got lots of green bowls and a few recycled platters in cream and white glazes, and she wanted to keep the work really functional for this exhibition. And she's done that. It's really lots of pieces there that we're desiring to have.
you have to sell them. Don't get stuck
right.
on that one. Now, it must be really difficult pulling together a venue and having a program that you can project in the forward and know that you've got artists coming in. You're obviously very hardworking women. Tell me, I understand you've got an interesting history, Penny. You were associated with the Australian Galleries.
Yes. So I ran the Australian Galleries Works on Paper Gallery for several years before moving down to the peninsula. So it's been great just to engage again in that world and be talking with artists and seeing lots of work. It's a bit of a work in progress, the planning the program for the year. It's something we're still in the process of. I guess we wanted to have this first show and just sort of see how that goes. We're in conversation with quite a few other practitioners, mm-hmm. Who'll hopefully come on board during the year. So it's a very exciting time, and I think the space lends itself to... There's great potential from performance work to installation work.
Do the light boxes limit you to objects and works that go on the wall? Do they accommodate, or are they accommodated by the space?
I think they will be able to accommodate to a certain extent, but it will be limiting. So that's
coming out of
their
works on paper area. You're sort of moving into a different place, aren't you? Really?
Yes, that's right. That's right. So I could imagine.
Not that there's anything wrong with objects.
No, not at all. Far from it. But I imagine, you know, in the art boxes, we could still exhibit maybe unframed works on paper that are pinned, or, you know, I think there'll be options within that. Yes.
Yeah. And are you focusing particularly on local artists, or are your sites further afield?
We do have a particular focus on local artists. That was part of the impetus to get this space together, because we're aware that there are lots of artists down here doing really interesting, great work, and they're sort of flying under the radar. So we sort of thought this is a great way to sort of bring them out there, be seen, be appreciated. And but I think it's also important to contextualise the work. So we are inviting artists from further afield as well.
Well, it's always great for the local artists actually to interact with with other artists from different areas as well, because that's it's a really healthy mix.
Yeah.
Well, look, it's fantastic. We wish you all the best with it.
Thank you.
Now, the exhibition is open now. Presumably, the after the opening night, the pieces go back into the boxes. So how do people get to see what's in those boxes now? Is it between the yoga sessions, or can people just drop in at any time?
Yes, we're opening from 10 till 6, and people can drop in, come down to the car park, walk into the breezeway, and you'll see the artwork in the boxes.
And is there a little glass window? Can people see into the yoga studio as well?
Yes, they can.
That's good, because there's a double whammy here, is that people might actually find themselves being introduced to yoga as
That's
well.
That's right. Yeah. And I was just going to add that we plan to, throughout the exhibition, to change the work that's in the boxes, so there'll be new things all the time. So it's
during the single
exhibition feast.
That's right, yeah.
Fabulous. Yeah. How do people find you? Have you got a website?
Yes, we do. We've added our page onto the Silverleaf Yoga School website, but we've also got our own individual Instagram account and Facebook page.
So just do a search for Silverleaf Art Box and you'll find us.
Fantastic. Thank you both so much for coming in today. Good luck with it all. And we look forward to seeing the work.
Thanks,
Fantastic.
Sally.
Fantastic. Thanks, Sally. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Now, just coming up, I have a great track from a man called Augie Kaupel and the Royal Tahitians. John, you will find this very interesting. He came to Hollywood in the 1930s, and I reckon that Elvis Presley has been listening to him.
Mm.
Sorry about the crackles, but how amazing was that?
That was fabulous.
It was pretty good, wasn't it? Will found him somehow working through YouTube, I think, on the weekend.
And I hope he's one of those Hawaiians who's really fat and still gives it that Elvis swing.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't think... Well, I've only seen a photograph of him from the neck up, and he didn't look fat.
Oh.
And he's Tahitian.
Oh, well, that's a disappointment on both counts.
Well, I'm sure you can be fat and a Tahitian as well. But anyway, now, coming up, we have Cheryl Beattie from the music industry. And the life-enhancing benefits of a musical education is known and appreciated by most people these days, but it's taken some commitment to get our children to their music lessons, particularly if you live down on the southern part of the Mornington Peninsula. But thankfully, that is all about to change, because musician, singer, songwriter Cheryl Beattie has opened a music school on the corner of the plaza in Rosebud. And as well as providing teachers for lots of different instruments and voice, she's committed to exposing young performers to the skills and triumphs of performance as well. Look, it's a philosophical shift that I personally agree with and have championed myself with the lineup with Karen Fairfax in Frankston and Rye. So to tell us why she thinks it's important too, Cheryl Beattie joins us in the studio this morning. Good morning, Cheryl, and welcome to Arts About.
Good morning, Sally.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning, John.
Now, Cheryl, firstly, great news that we've got a music school opened up down there. But first, tell us a little bit about who you are and why it's been important to you to do this.
I've been around a long time. You're very kind. I've been singing all my life, and I was very shy actually when I was young, and I had this voice that my parents were aware of, and they sort of put me into various bands at a very, very young age and were instrumental in taking me along to you know, different venues to perform from the age of 14. And it took me many years, but they really believed that the more I got that exposure and did that, the more I'd be able to, you know, have the confidence to sing. And it was quite right. So I've got over my shyness through music and through performance. And then obviously I went and moved overseas and was signed to a record company quite quickly, which was great. It was a development deal with BMG mm-hmm. and was moved to New York. So I experienced then the songwriting side of things, which I'd already started at a very young age.
How old were you then when that first happened?
23.
Wow. Yeah.
So it was fantastic. So all of a sudden I'm, you know, in the middle of New York, you know, working with fantastic people, amazing. Rick Wake, Hugh Padgham, you know, worked singing all the, I used to do all the demos and things for Celine Dion, and like it was just an amazing experience. So then I would go to LA and write with, you know, Steinberg and Kelly, who write like A Virgin and So Emotional mm-hmm. and all the other, there's so many great songwriters that I worked with. And so I really learnt, you know, about the songwriting side of it and how crafted and you know, that you can be. I mean, obviously there's two different ways with songwriting. So for me, then it was about performance. So obviously I made a record, went out performing, you know, had a fantastic singing teacher over there who taught me about studio, how different it is to actually sing, you know, in a studio than to sing live, and things that you just take for granted that you don't realise until you get into a studio, you realise, no, you can't belt that out as loudly as you do live, and what have you, dynamics, all of that. So I've just been so fortunate. And then, so then I went, moved to London and had another experience, and I was signed to Warner's and had a song come out in the dance field, which went number one in the dance clubs and what have you in London.
What was it?
It was called Fly. You can Google it. It's on, yeah. So that was fantastic. So then I got to go all around the country and do radio shows and perform again. So then I got to an age where I really didn't want to be a dance artist, to be honest. I wanted to be a singer-songwriter. So I didn't want to pursue that too much more, and I wanted to move home. My brother became very ill, so I moved home and started a family and started teaching and from home because I had a young family and still performing. So I work with great people up in Melbourne. I work with some amazing musicians and kept songwriting with different artists. And I just wanted to, my children have now grown up, and so this has been my dream. To build
start
a facility,
a music school.
To pass on all the knowledge that I've gained. And I've done, as I said, I've been doing it from home and taking the little kiddies that are now grown up and professional singers all these years to different, you know, nursing homes to, you know, to do singing as much as they can to get them out there singing. So, and now they're all, you know, out there doing plays,
things.
Going around the world, being the lead role, and, you know, singing,
yeah,
getting scholarships, you know, singer-songwriters. And, you know, yesterday I had one of them come in, Madison Wilson, she's amazing, and she said, Cheryl, you know, I could never have done what I'm doing now without those years of, you know, the nursing homes and
yeah. Well, I think that's the most, that is a really incredible difference in styles of teaching and in format for music schools, is that once you add on the performance element of it, the whole process of learning develops an utterly different impetus. You know,
yes.
if there's an end product, then students get in there and they have a much greater reason
yes.
to do it. It becomes purposeful. And I think that
exactly.
makes an enormous difference to young emerging artists.
Absolutely.
Well, how incredible that you're down here at Rosebud. Is this where you have lived with your bringing up your family down on the Mornington Peninsula?
I have. I
yep.
live in Rye.
Yep.
And so I've been running the Carols by Candlelight down there for the last 11 years.
Oh, there's probably lots of people that know you then, aren't there, in this business
well,
down here?
I haven't, yes, I guess a lot of young entertainers, a lot of young singers, because I get all the talent organised
yep.
and I keep it peninsula based.
Yes.
And we have so much talent. They're
yep.
just divine. So that's been great, but I want to do a lot more community work and try and, so I want to, you know, get some busking going together and also fundraising,
yep.
you know, so it's not necessarily, you know, it's all going to go to perhaps, I'm working at the moment with my mother in Frankston. We're raising money for the homeless with Glen Aiken.
Yep.
And so I want to bring that to the peninsula, what we need down there, and do a lot of that.
And do it out of the music school.
Through singing.
Yeah, okay. So tell us about the school itself. It's down on the corner there of Boneo and Point Nepean Road.
That's right.
And what's there?
Okay, so...
She's covered in paint at the moment, everybody, too, because I think she might have been painting there.
Finished at 11 o'clock last night. Okay, so what we've built is 7 teaching rooms, a studio...
Mm-hmm.
A digital studio and a live room out the back for performance,
right?
And songwriting workshops. That's going to be a huge thing for us. Whatever else hookups I want to do once a month, where the children that are learning at the school get a chance to hook up with other children. Like perhaps put little bands together. I've been doing a bit of that up at Red Hill,
mm-hmm.
And because that's where children grow as well. So it's not just
learning an instrument
mm-hmm. and also just performing. It's about putting them together with other musicians, a bass player and a drummer for the first time playing together. It's very different to a bass player sitting at home just learning songs. He's actually getting to lock in with a drummer and then all of that. And that's where they grow.
Of course it is. So you have lots of different teachers teaching different instruments
lots of different teachers. We've actually got Ron Lees. Do you know Ron Lees? He's the fabulous opera singer. He's now teaching down at the school. So we're going to have all elements of styles and instruments.
Okay, so do you have a website?
We're actually building one at the moment.
Okay, so stand by, everybody.
Stand by for that.
How do people get in touch with you then to find out how to get involved if they're interested?
Yes, so I'm going to give my mobile number.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 0401
mm-hmm.
904
mm-hmm.
616.
616. Do you have an email address?
Yes, I do.
Yes,
so
okay.
That's Cheryl, Cheryl, @themusicindustry.com.
Okay, well, I suspect that there's lots of people out there who would be interested or know somebody who might be interested, so we'll spread the word. We'll also put a link up on our Facebook page. It sounds like a sensational venture. We'd love to hear how things are going. And so if you've got events that you would like to let us know, please let us know. We'll talk about it on the radio, and perhaps one day we'll get some of the kids in to do a performance here in our wonderful Bluescope studio.
They would love that. That would be wonderful.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Cheryl Beattie, for coming in. Keep an eye out for a website, because it will be coming. Will it be The Music Industry?
Yes,
is that
will.
Going to be your
yes,
name?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. We'll keep you informed and put something up on the Facebook page.
Thanks for that, Cheryl. And can I say that I can't remember what Sally's first question was, but that's one of the best answers I've ever heard. Very thorough.
It went on a bit, didn't it?
As she said, she's done a lot of work on radio, so she's very comfortable and behind the mic. Thanks so much, Cheryl Beattie.
Thanks, Sally. Thanks, John.
Okay.
And now it's time for John On.
It is indeed that time. Now I'm going to talk a bit about Margaret and Christine Wertheim.
Yes.
Who I think you know one of these people.
I do. I know Christine.
Are they twin sisters?
They're twin sisters, although I don't know Margaret. I only know Christine because we were friends in the 80s, 90s in London.
Okay. Well, these days they run a thing called the Institute for Figuring.
Oh, yes. Maths or psychology or something.
Yes, maths and science. They're interested in things like fractals and engaging people in that way of thinking by getting people to make things which involve mathematics and fractals. And the results are sometimes very surprising. I know, for instance, that they made some large sculptural pieces that weren't intended to be sculptural pieces but turned out to be that described mathematical fractals that were made out of folded business cards. So they use cast-off materials to make all sorts of other things. And amongst what they're doing is that they've figured out how to crochet waste materials, essentially, stripped up bits of plastic. And they've been teaching people how to do this, and they've been crocheting a coral reef. They started this some time ago.
Yeah, well, they must have started a long time ago, because I remember Christine beginning that when I was still in London, which must have been in 1990, 1993 or 1994, right. thereabouts.
Well, this thing is ongoing and getting bigger and is apparently the largest artwork in the world, but again, not really intended to be an artwork in the first place, it would seem, in that it involves recycling materials and it involves a whole lot of other people who are sort of doing it for worthy reasons as well as artistic ones.
Mm-hmm.
And it involves a process of getting people to think about mathematics and science and coral reefs, presumably, and the peril that they might be in. All of which are kind of things, when associated with art, turn me off a bit. I'm more of your kind of suffering guy in a garret using chemicals.
Sort of. With a more purist's kind of ideal.
I'm not really... I don't get all that excited about art therapy or community art or those sorts of things.
Yeah.
It's more the personal sort of artist thing for me. But this one itself, I just find riveting.
Right. And why? Why is it different?
Well, because of the work itself.
Yeah. Because the work's so beautiful.
It is beautiful. Yeah. It's just so beautiful. It's and it happens... I gather in much the same way that a coral reef does. It builds on itself. It keeps growing. It builds on itself. It's now in various places all around the world. People are still working on it, making it bigger and bigger. And
so it's in lots of different situations, is it? So it's just growing up. It's just everywhere.
It's not in one place. It's all around the world. It's not just in one place. You can go to their website and learn how to... learn how to start crocheting your own coral reef, I imagine, you know.
And it might sound a little bit, you know, naff, but actually I've seen some of it. I haven't seen the new website, but I have seen some of it. It is very, very beautiful. And it is very, very lifelike in many ways, you know. You step back a tiny little bit of it from it and it really looks like coral, doesn't it?
Well, and makes you wonder about... the creative intent of coral itself, you know, because it sort of, it comes up with some magnificent things.
Mm.
And
it's a wonder of the universe, John.
There are personalities that can be kind of recognised in various parts of coral. Different parts of coral seem to have different personalities. And the same with this work. It is just like, you can see where people have taken a slightly different approach and you get these blooms of particular style coming out of the...
Different kind of coral.
Yeah.
How fabulous.
Oh, it is fabulous, yeah. And the website's great too. If you Google crochet coral reef, it'll get you straight there.
Oh, well, I'll have to have another look at it. She was such an interesting woman when I met her. I'm sad I didn't meet her twin. I don't know where her twin was, but she was wild and fun and, she was pretty kooky. And she was so different to all of us because she was into mathematics and sciences and it was just something that we didn't get at all.
Well, the Institute for Figuring is a great title.
It is a really good title.
Something else has sort of popped up, Sally, this morning, actually, in front of me.
Yes.
There's a Leonardo da Vinci drawing in England.
Yes.
And... reputed to be worth about $100 million. And some guy stuck his hand up and said, I made that in 1978.
What?
And he's saying that it's a forgery of his and that he made it on an old bit of parchment and he did it on an old wooden desk lid and it's actually a drawing of the checkout chick at the local supermarket.
And why is the provenance of this particular artwork so questionable then? Do we know that? Do we know presumably it's in a museum?
I think because it's getting nearer and nearer to being sold. So people are starting to say, well, that's a Da Vinci drawing and it might be worth blah, blah, blah. And the swing tag's getting bigger and he suddenly just stuck his hand up and saying, no, it's not.
Oh.
I made that myself. But other people are saying, well, no, he's lying. He's... claiming that's a forgery when it's not. It's actually real, you know. So perhaps they're the people who want to defend the swing tag. I don't know. But
perhaps they're the people that own it already.
But he's forging the possibility of it being a forgery.
Wow. How exciting.
Yeah.
Well, we better keep in touch with this. How are we going to keep track of this?
I was reading about it in the Telegraph, the UK Telegraph, and...
Do you know who owns it now?
No, it's privately owned.
Right. We'd be spewing if you were, if you'd spent, you know, $50,000.
Well, if you've got a $100 million Leonardo, Leonardo da Vinci, and suddenly it turns into a 1978 drawing of a checkout chick,
that's worth $2,600,000. You would be a bit upset.
Well, like, notorious forgeries are often worth a lot of money.
Yeah, of course, but not nearly so much as perhaps a Leonardo drawing. Mm. Well, wow, I'll be waiting with bated breath to hear what happens with that one.
Yeah, if we ever hear about it again, it might just disappear.
Oh, no, I'm going to keep tracking that one. That's really interesting. Mm. The checkout chick.
Yeah.
The checkout chick in the 70s. Mm. Hey, Cliff, what do you think about that? Our great mentor has arrived in the studio once again this morning. Actor, commentator, agitator and friend of the show, Cliff Ellen. Good morning, Cliff. Yes, pull the mic down. That's all right. Close your ears, everybody.
If he can afford $100 million, who cares?
Well, yeah, if he can, that's right.
Won't hurt him. No.
Probably not.
I'm more interested in... knowing how to spell crochet, you know. I've got to Google crochet coral reef. Maybe Google will tell me.
C-R-O-C-H-E-T.
Is that how you spell it?
Yeah. Yep.
No, I didn't know that. Nope.
So obviously you're not a crochet expert then, Cliff?
No, I'm not an expert in 100 things.
Find that hard to believe.
But I'm really happy that Skirlies have gone.
Have they gone, though? Have they actually gone?
Yeah, I think they've gone.
Oh, that's good.
Well, they've gone by the time this show comes through air.
Of course they have, that's right.
What's the idea of criticising my song last week? John said it would get mentioned.
I've forgotten what it was now.
Because we thought it was appalling.
Yeah, it was bloody awful. What was it?
That's fair enough, but the opening song of the show was dreadful also.
Oh, put
now,
a lid
I
on
don't
it.
Mind, if you're going to have a go of mine... For goodness sakes, put a decent song at the start. It nearly made me turn it off.
I can't even remember what it was now. It's all turned into a blur. What was the one of yours that we dissed?
They shoot horses down.
That's right. Yeah, that was dreadful.
I'm saying you two are hypocritical. But
anyway. That was a terrible film too, wasn't it? With Billy Mummy in it.
Oh, dreary, as you said.
Gig Young.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I did a jiving contest when I was young, so I connected with it.
Well, I was interested in and as you know, I'm interested in segues of all sort, but last week I was in fact talking slightly about ballroom competition dancing, which is what those shoot horses, don't they, is about.
That's right.
I can't even remember what the subject matter is.
It's people dancing for money, like duration dancing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, I used to teach dancing years ago. Shit happens at La Mama went really well. Three performances packed out.
Oh, that's great.
Dan Burstall, cinematographer on High Rolling, said it was one of the best productions he's ever seen at La Mama.
Ooh.
So well done to Sandy McGregor. She came back from America. Things were quiet here. She got this up and it's been hell, apparently, but they all loved it. So big tick for that.
Oh, that's really good news.
John Cleese is overseeing the process to cast Fawlty Towers. The world premiere season... the auditions are in February.
What are they doing? They're doing a stage show, are they?
Yep, in Sydney. Yes. I like these little things. The cast has been announced for the new Australian production of Fiddler on the Roof, which opened here about 50 years ago.
Can somebody tell me how many productions there would have been of Fiddler on the Roof?
It's been a lot.
I'm not sure anyone could tell you that.
I don't think they could.
Well, we've got Anthony Warlow.
There are no numbers.
Can't count that high.
A rich man, Anthony Warlow, I suppose, but... sadly, it's also got Sigrid Thornton and Mark Mitchell. Nicky Wendt's all right, but those two.
Mark Mitchell, where's he been?
I don't know, but he's popped up in Fiddler, and there's nothing better for an actor to get a part in one of these musicals. They pay very well, and he probably wouldn't have to do much. A little bit of chorus work, you know, behind the scenes.
Would he be playing the fiddle on the roof?
No. I would think Anthony Warlow would be doing If I Were a Rich Man.
Right.
He's the only one that sings amongst those ones I mentioned. You were talking about it last week, weren't you? This Rye Carnival.
Yeah, the Cabaret Carnival.
Cabaret Carnival. Wayne Herman and Jason Coleman.
Yeah.
Do we have to put up with that too? We've already got the carnival. Now they've put this on across the road.
Cabaret Cathedral, I mean.
Tickets from $50.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot cheaper than, you know...
Than what?
Up the road in Melbourne. Isn't it?
I believe so. I complained to somebody and they said, well, it's a lot cheaper than Melbourne.
Yeah, well, you of all people would know how expensive it is to put
I
on.
I noticed you too.
It's going to interfere, no doubt, with your...
Yeah, you're going to come too.
Your morning stroll will be interfered with, no doubt, Cliff, with a big sort of funny-looking building on the foreshore down there. Is that the problem? Or it's just the amount of people that will be hanging around?
Oh, it just attracts a lot of people, you know. Yeah.
I think the whole thing is going to look quite interesting. I like the sound of the way it's going to look.
And you know the other thing that I think's really good about it too is that it brings a whole lot of family groups back down to the carnival, because I think it needs mothers and fathers down there, quite frankly.
It's dangerous.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's an element that gets a little bit crazy, and I think that the theatre will bring
the carnival.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think something like this will work. This will do really well.
Yeah. They've got the carols by candlelight working well, because that's great. Police are there and all the rest of the business. What about? Did you see that piece in the Age on the idea of a trip advisor for the arts? I think that's a great idea.
I don't know. No, what was it?
Yeah, somebody wrote something about the suggestion. You know, you'd have each state putting in their normal production stuff, but where we are in Victoria, you know, the MTC or Malthouse will put something in the paper, but the other theatre crowds don't really have a say. But if they had a trip advisor and got it up, and you just get your little machine and boom, boom, what's on tonight, and reviews, you'd want comments too.
Yeah.
You know. I think it's a great idea.
It is a good idea, although there is a lot of criticism about TripAdvisor that people can put up nasty reviews just because they want to, or they're upset by something that happened to them on the night, or, you know, I think it happens
You're
a lot
talking
to restaurants
about the accommodation
and hotels.
Style
well, yes, yes. And if that model is used, the same thing could happen. I mean, you might go along to something and, I don't know. I just think it's a good idea.
You'd have to have one in each state and you just, you know, look it up.
I agree with you.
I think it's a great idea. Now,
the
final episode of ABC's A Beautiful Life.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. Is it good?
Well, let me see. To those wondering why Sarah Snook stood in front of the train, all I can say is wonder no more, because if you have to work alongside... Benedict Samuels. I too would step in front of the train. Although I'm not totally blaming him. I'd blame the director as well.
Yeah.
Because, well, there was just no...
There was no electricity between them, was there?
No, in the final episode, there was no strong reason why she would stand in front of a train.
Right.
It just didn't gel. And it's sad because the final episode is so important everywhere, you know.
Yes, of course.
And they get these ones that build up. Yeah, I didn't like it, but a lot of people did like it. But in the final episode was, in my opinion...
Well, I loved a lot of the characters in it. I really enjoyed watching lots of it.
Well, there were two great characters. Sophie Lowe was terrific.
Yeah, she was.
As a younger girl. And, of course, Dan Wiley is fast becoming one of the best actors in Australia.
Isn't he great?
He died in the second last scene, didn't he, or something like that?
Yeah.
But there was a dinner scene.
Yes.
They were all there. And Dan just stole the show.
Yeah.
Thank God he was in that dinner scene.
So, Cliff, that issue that you're talking about with it not making sense at the end or it not being credible, is that a scripting issue or a casting issue? Or
it's a casting, I reckon.
Well, obviously it's to do with that... what's the name of the classic show? It's based on the...
Oh, Anna Karenina.
Anna Karenina.
Yeah.
But they're built up, they had to sort of go the whole way where she killed herself. But you've got to have a good reason why.
Right.
And you'd have to watch it.
Yeah.
And I'm certain that 9 out of 10 people would say, well, I didn't see why she should stand in front of the train. And that's the whole key to the finish.
Right.
She, you know... There you go.
I've been watching Peaky Blinders instead.
Oh, have you? I enjoyed Peaky Blinders.
That's right. And there's the ratings, by the way, for 2015. 7-1, 29%. 9-2, 28%. Then 10 with 19. ABC with 17. And surprisingly, SBS with 13, which is really good.
Oh, okay.
And I've never watched the top shows on 7, 9 or 10. So
no, I never watched them either.
I can't really talk about... 800 words or The Block or The Bachelorette. But the two favourite shows of the year for me were Fargo and Peaky Blinders.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, Fargo, absolutely.
They're both SBS, I think, weren't they, John?
I watch it. No, I watch Peaky Blinders on ABC iView.
ABC 2 it is. Sorry. Mm. Peaky Blinders is ABC 2.
Now, I'm sorry to cut in, but we are running out of time. Okay. Cliff, do you have a song for us this afternoon?
Yeah, do you?
Yeah, I have.
What is it?
Elvis Presley.
Oh, let's get swinging.
I'm just going to come in and say corny songs every week.
No, they're not always corny songs. We love your music. We just didn't happen to like last one. So you mustn't take it personally, Cliff.
I take everything.
Thanks for coming in. Always wonderful to see you.
Bye-bye, all. Ladies and John.
Thanks,
and
Cliff.
Swanee. Bye-bye to Swanee.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was actually in a little earlier. Well, we do have to cut that back a little bit because we have run out of time. So I'm sorry, Cliff. It wasn't that we didn't love your song. We really liked
your
song.
Even though it's fabulous.
It is a fabulous song. Don't forget, everybody, the Silverleaf Art Box is open down at Merrick's. You should go along and have a look at Ingrid Brooker and Vicky Randall's work. It's on until January the 20th.
Keep your eyes peeled and your ears peeled for the Music Industry Music School. And is that on the corner of Point Nepean and Boney O'Road? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it is. I think
so not in the plaza.
Not actually in the plaza. It's in that bit that's right on the corner. Yep. There used to be a hairdressing salon there and there's a fish shop and all of that. Somewhere in there, yes. Tom Roberts at the NGV. Go and have a look at that.
Now, listen, Sally.
Yes?
There's a great big long paragraph.
We're not
going to
read that one now because we've run out of time. But I did want to mention, yes, that was the Neon Park Gallery and Dale Frank's work. But we just haven't run out of time, I think.
Andy Warhol and Ai Weiwei. I reckon Andy Warhol's fabulous and...
Ai Weiwei
can go and stick his head in a bucket as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I tell you what, I'm actually going to have a chat with the curator of that show over the next few weeks, I'm hoping.
Well,
Max
they'll be
Delaney.
All for it.
Of course they will be, but it'll be very interesting to hear a little bit about that. McCulloch and McCulloch, there is still, for the rest of the afternoon, I think you can go along and see, they've got a quirky and colourful Christmas salon on at their place. Have a look at their website. It's only on for the rest of the afternoon today.
Gilbert and George!
Yes, Gilbert and George. I can't wait to go see them down at Mona until the end of March. Hopefully we're going to hear from Gary Willis and Will Bailey, who are actually heading off to visit the NGV as we speak, to talk to Gilbert and George, or hear from them.
So they're not going down to Mona.
No.
They haven't taken off in a boat or anything.
They're here. I think...
Roger Kemp at Eastgate and Horst.
Yes, Sabra Lazarus is on in the library. And you've missed Arts About if you've only just tuned in. So if you have just tuned in, listen on Wednesday or... check out the podcast, which will be on the station website at some point tomorrow. Also, Tom Rippon is going to be on at Stillwater with ProMerging.
There's quite a lot of news, isn't there?
I know, there is a lot. Look,
Not enough time.
No, not enough time. Check out the Facebook page. I'll put as many links as I can on that. Thanks for listening to us. Please join us again next weekend. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
But we do know what we like.
We know what we like.